The Man Who Was Marked for Death. The afternoon I met Ernest Walsh, the poet, in Ezra's studio, he was with two girls in long mink coats, and there was a long, shiny hired car from Claridge's outside in the street, with a uniformed chauffeur. The girls were blondes, and they had crossed on the same ship with Walsh. The ship had arrived the day before, and he had brought them with him to visit Ezra. Ernest Walsh was dark, intense, faultlessly Irish, poetic and clearly marked for death as a character in Marked for Death in a Motion Picture. He was talking to Ezra and I talked with the girls, who asked me if I had read Mr. Walsh's poems. I had not, and one of them brought out a green-covered copy of Harriet Monroe's Poetry, a magazine of verse, and showed me poems by Walsh in it. "He gets $1,200 apiece," she said. "For each poem," the other girl said. My recollection was that I received $12 a page, if that, from the same magazine. "He must be a very great poet," I said. "It's more than Eddie Guest gets," the first girl told me. "It's more than who's that other poet gets, you know." "Kipling," her friend said. "It's more than anybody gets ever," the first girl said. "Are you staying in Paris very long?" I asked them. "Well, no, not really. We're with a group of friends. We came over on this boat, you know, but there wasn't anyone on it, really. Mr. Walsh was on it, of course." "Doesn't he play cards?" I asked. She looked at me in a disappointing but understanding way. "No, he doesn't have to. Not writing poetry the way he can write it." "What ship are you going back on?" "Well, that depends. It depends on the boats and on a lot of things. Are you going back?" "No, I'm getting by all right. This is sort of the poor quarter over here, isn't it?" "Yes, but it's pretty good. I work the cafes and I'm out at the track."
"Can you go out to the track in those clothes?"
"No, this is my cafe outfit."
"It's kind of cute," one of the girls said. "I'd like to see some of that cafe life, wouldn't you, dear?"
"I would," the other girl said. I wrote their names down in my address book and promised to call them at Claridge's. They were nice girls, and I said goodbye to them and to Walsh and to Ezra. Walsh was still talking to Ezra with great intensity.
"Don't forget," the taller one of the girls said.
"How could I?" I told her and shook hands with them both again. The next I heard from Ezra about Walsh was that he had been bailed out of Claridge's by some lady admirers of poetry and of young poets who were marked for death. And the next thing, some time after that, was that he had financial backing from another source and was going to start a new magazine in the quarter as a co-editor. At the time, The Dial, an American literary magazine edited by Schofield Thayer, gave an annual award of, I believe, $1,000 for excellence in the practice of letters by a contributor. This was a huge sum for any straight writer to receive in those days, in addition to the prestige, and the award had gone to various people, all deserving, naturally. Two people, then, could live comfortably and well in Europe on $5 a day. And could travel. This quarterly, of which Walsh was one of the editors, was alleged to be going to award a very substantial sum to the contributor, whose work should be judged the best at the end of the first four issues. If the news was passed around by gossip or rumor, or if it was a matter of personal confidence, cannot be said. Let us hope and believe always that it was completely honorable in every way. Certainly nothing could ever be said or imputed against Walsh's co-editor. It was not long after I heard rumors of this alleged award that Walsh asked me to lunch one day at a restaurant that was the best and the most expensive in the Boulevard St. Michel quarter, and after the oysters, expensive, flat, faintly coppery marines, not the familiar, deep, inexpensive Portuguese, and a bottle of Poulet Fousse, began to lead up to it delicately. He appeared to be conning me as he had conned the shills from the boat. If,
They were shills, and if he had conned them, of course, and when he had asked me if I would like another dozen of the flat oysters, as he called them, I said I would like them very much. He did not bother to look marked for death with me, and this was a relief. He knew, I knew, he had the con. Not the kind you con with, but the kind you died of, then and how bad it was. And he did not bother to have to cough. And I was grateful for this at the table. I was wondering if he ate the flat oysters in the same way the whores in Kansas City, who were marked for death and practically everything else, always wished to swallow semen as a sovereign remedy against the con. But I did not ask him. I began my second dozen of the flat oysters, picking them from their bed of crushed ice on the silver plate, watching their unbelievably delicate brown edges react and cringe as I squeezed lemon juice on them and separated the holding muscle from the shell and lifted them to chew them carefully. Ezra's a great, great poet, Walsh said, looking at me with his own dark poet's eyes. Yes, I said, and a fine man. Noble, Walsh said, truly noble. We ate and drank in silence as a tribute to Ezra's nobility. I missed Ezra and wished he were there. He could not afford marines either. Joyce is great, Walsh said. Great, 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 I said, and a good friend. We had become friends in his wonderful period after the furnishing of Ulysses, and before starting what was called for a long time, work in progress. I thought of Joyce and remembered many things. I wish his eyes were better, Walsh said. So does he, I said. It is the tragedy of our time, Walsh told me. Everybody has something wrong with them, I said, trying to cheer up the lunch. You haven't. He gave me all his charm and more, and then he marked himself for death. You mean I am not marked for death? I asked. I could not help it. No, you're marked for life, he capitalized the word. Give me time, I said. He wanted a good steak, rare, and I ordered 2 tornadoes with sauce béarnaise. I figured the butter would be good for him. What about a red wine? He asked. The sommelier came and I ordered a Châteauneuf de Pape. I would walk it off afterwards along the quay. He could sleep it off or do what he wanted to. I might take mine someplace, I thought. I came as we finished the steak and French fried potatoes and were 2/3 through the Châteauneuf de Pape, which is not a luncheon wine. There's no use beating around the bush, he said. You know you're to get the award, don't you? Am I? I said. Why? You're to get it, he said. He started to talk about my writing, and I stopped listening. It made me feel sick for people to talk about my writing to my face, and I looked at him and his marked-for-death look, and I thought, you con man conning me with your con. I've seen a battalion in the dust on the road, 1/3 of them for death or worse, and no special marks on them. The dust for all, and you, and your marked-for-death look, you con man, making a living out of your death. Now you will con me. Con not, that thou be not conned. Death was not conning with him, it was conning, all right. I don't think I deserve it, Ernest, I said, enjoying using my own name that I hated to him. Besides, Ernest, it would not be ethical. Ernest, it's strange we have the same name, isn't it? Yes, Ernest, I said. It's a name we must both live up to. You see what I mean, don't you, Ernest? Yes, Ernest, he said. He gave me complete sad Irish understanding and that charm. So I was always very nice to him and to his magazine, and when he had his hemorrhages and left Paris, asking me to see his magazine through the printers who did not read English, I did that. I had seen one of the hemorrhages, it was very legitimate, and I knew that he would die all right. and it pleased me at the time, which was a difficult time in my life to be extremely nice to him, as it pleased me to call him Ernest. Also, I liked and admired his co-editor. She had not promised me any award. She only wished to build a good magazine and pay her contributors well. One day, much later, I met Joyce, who was walking along the Boulevard Saint-Germain after having been to a matinee alone. He liked to listen to the actors, although he could not see them. He asked me to have a drink with him, and we went to the Deux Maigots and ordered dry sherry, although you will always read that he drank only Swiss white wine.
"How about Walsh?" Joyce said.
"A such and such alive is a such and such dead," I said.
"Did he promise you that award?" Joyce said.
"Yes, I thought so," Joyce said.
"Did he promise it to you?"
"Yes," Joyce said. After a time, he asked, "Do you think he promised it to Pound?"
"I don't know."
"Best not to ask him," Joyce said. We left it at that. I told Joyce of my first meeting with him in Ezra's studio, with the girls in the long fur coats, and it made him happy to hear the story.